Please, you don't mind me, I'm John Carlisle with the Latin Department, and my mentor is there, Mike Tapson. Please speak up. The comments I'm going to present today are a group effort of scientists for the last Department of Communications. After your task presentation, there's going to be a little bit of an overlap between some of the comments he made, some of the ones we're going to make. And my main purpose on this slide was to do something bright, just for saying, hyping people up, and also show a little bit. Start off with some general comments about the draft report. The first thing that we'd like to say is that overall we thought that the draft report was well done and provided some important insights. Specifically, some things we wanted to point out was that the point out here that a lot of these things we're going to talk about. Some of the key things we took out of this report, and our interpretation of what the report was saying anyway, was that growth rate criteria may not be the best way to really assess whether these things are recovered. And that was reiterated in the report, where they said the population growth rate is a metric of some of the people who recovered each of these things. Another thing to point out is the abundance. Numbers of families and rate. It hasn't, the population hasn't been declining. And that if you actually looked at abundance as opposed to this growth rate, that the population of the contingency territory is going to recover inevitably. And these are just some important statements. And the all likelihood is that if you go to an abundance-based criteria, there's a chance that if you stick with this 2.3% growth rate criteria, you're never going to be less than that, no matter how large the population gets. Especially if you're getting near their carrying capacity, because you're not going to be able to maintain that growth rate as you're approaching your carrying capacity. And so basically our and it seems to be borne out in the report is that a much better criteria would be an actual number for abundance-based criteria as opposed to this growth rate criteria. I'll make a few comments about genetic abundance from the report. There was a comment in the report that said that genetic abundance would need to increase roughly 25-40% per year to achieve. It was estimated and modeled that you need to increase the population by 25% a year to achieve this 2.3% growth rate of the population. They know that there have only been 3 years, 3 or 5 years, and that's their ability to achieve that. But it also went on to say that if you look at the Chinook abundance, you know, from Chinook abundance indices from the Chinook model, that you know, there's actually been a decline in total abundance. But because of the restrictions that have been taking place in fisheries, you've actually had a 37% increase in the impact of turbo abundance, which the fish. essentially, we've had a 40% increase, if you look historically at what's happening, and yet we haven't realized this 2.3% growth rate. And another interesting thing we noted is after the first workshop, prior to the draft report, the panel had looked at this competing risk of death model. And what they modeled in that was the fact that these killer whales were such bad predators that as the population or the abundance of them went down, their foraging increased dramatically, and basically as the abundance went down, they just ate more and more Chinook. And what this model basically was a situation where the stomach contents or the stomach size of the animal was a limiting factor in how much they ate, not how many Chinook were out there. And if that's the case, if this model upside is correct, then you wouldn't expect to find any correlation between the numbers of Chinook. Another thing that was pointed out in the report was that some of the analyses that were done sort of tacitly assumed that if you didn't harvest these fish, that they were going to be, if you didn't harvest the Chinook, they were going to be available. All of that foregone harvest was going to be available for consumption of the killer whale. Well, there's some obvious reasons why that may not be true, and it's probably not true. And that is that not all the fish that you going and harvest or maturing that year. They're not going to come back to the terminal runs and terminal areas. Not only that, there's issues with migratory timing, migratory paths, not all the fish are going to be in the area and available to consume the killer whale. Then, one of the things we noted too, in the area, okay, I feel like I'm reading right in. One of the things we noted too is that in the population viability analysis that we've done, in order to project the southern arisen growth rates, they had to assume a range of variation in abundance that was lower than what's actually been observed in the past. And what that implies is if you can't estimate the growth rates from the observed level of variation, other factors that are contributing to those growth rates that could be potentially as important or more important. And the next slide shows that the panel has some of the same concerns. You know, there's other issues going on here, just like Chinook abundance. There's the stage specific survival, sex ratio at birth, calving probability. There's other things going on. Yes, are more important than the other thing we noted is, you know, there's been sort of regression in what is the indicator of abundance for Chinook that we're looking at. In the first analysis we saw, we used the Chinook abundance index from the CTC and the Salmon Commission, and then it seemed to kind of shift to Fram abundances, and then the latest ones that we've been looking at are these Park and Cope. The question is that the right one? What is the right index? Is there a better one out there? What stock should be in the index? And the panel agreed in the executive summary. They said there's some abundance index uncertainty. And how do we know that they're really affecting the stocks and the abundance? Comments on diet here as well. Sort of overlap something that Pat was talking about. Said the selectivity by southern residents on different stocks of Chinook is poorly known. There's some uncertainties. One of the things that we came away with is that it seemed like there was a lot of emphasis placed on model selection to pick the set of stocks that you're looking at, and that it could a better way to really achieve maybe what folks were trying to get at was to actually use some existing knowledge and some logic instead of just model selection techniques, and try to look at excluding stocks based on their range and the genetic analysis. Know stocks based on genetic analysis that they're feeding on in the summertime feeding center. Talking about this, that's talking in the last part of this citation here is that there's a little blend in diet. But the data does exist against the importance of genetic. Well, that's a fairly strong statement. Samples off the coast of Washington. In reality, that's not enough to really say that they're good. So, granted, we have some good information from the summer, but realistically, from the winter, I don't think we have enough information to say. And I'll go through this pretty quickly here. Basically, in the late 60s, there were 96 animals that about the high of the population size. And then another quote that they had gotten down to around 60 animals in the early 70s, mid 70s. And another quote that said there was actually 72 animals. And now they're backed up. Good, I don't know what the leaf summer is, the high humans, I believe. And there's an assumption that the population has been fairly stable and declining. Well, the real decline that went on time period was actually because of the capture for the aquarium trade. And reservations or concerns were brought up for the fact that even though this population may not be declining, because it's such a small population, you know, they could have threats from unforeseen circumstances and that they lack resiliency. But if you look at what happened to them, since we're such a pulse fish, out a number of individuals that not only reduce the population size, but have impacts on the sex ratios and age composition of the population. And perhaps these animals are actually more resilient than we give them credit for, even though their population size is fairly small. And the last thing I want to say is we had quite a few comments on correlation.
Sounds like the baseline you take is important for looking at what the population trends are, and I'm wondering why you're paying attention to the high 90s and the mid-60s instead of the high 90s and the mid-90s and the decline from that level. So, you know, there was that pulse fishing you talked about, but numerically the population recovered from that before the recent decline that the concern that we're here to deal with. Why the towards the 60s for the baseline or in the 70s, I guess, in your baseline is the end of the capture period as opposed to, you know, when the population recovered from the capture period.
Right. I guess one of the points, I explained it very well, but one of the points you're trying to make is you wouldn't expect this monotonic increase in this population after the pulse fishing. Said, you have a population where you removed a large number of animals, which is sex ratio, age composition, whatever, and there's going to be effects in the population for a long time to come. You wouldn't expect a lot of increase in these animals, and yet they are, if you look at the trend, they are increasing. Granted, the numbers now may not be the high from what they were in the late 90s.
think the point of picking the starting population in the mid-70s after depredation by humans is leading us into increased feeling, and they're not increasing. We have 84 animals right now. I think one more this summer. I don't know statistics well enough to appreciate all the smoke and beer part, but definitely we do not have an increasing population, and I think we have to get past that feeling. Probably we had on the order of 100 before the captures, or 120 even, and we're at 84 now, and to me that's a decrease. And if we pick any other decade other than the mid-70s, right at the bottom of the population, we come to the same conclusion that they're decreasing.
Yes.
I go back to the presentation on a diet from seasonality. I'm going to go back to that. Well, no, I don't think so. I think the point I'm about to make is identify when you say summer.
Said March, April, May, spring, May, September, summer, October, November, fall, and December, March, winter. Would that work?
That might work. I'm going to go over that a lot in one of my talks, and for whatever reason I chose to do it well, it's based on the solstices, and so you've got July, August, September, summer, November, December is fall, January, March is winter. Those don't necessarily exactly correspond to what the whales think the season is necessarily, but that's much of a standard season.
And David, I wanted to make a comment related to this topic because I think all the comments that people offered were that point was made, that Craig was made about this look at this time period when you're talking about the summers. But another impression that comes across from someone from the graphic court, certainly, I know by several commenters, is that we've developed this mindset that the whales in the summer inside and the whales outside. And it's not that black and white, but to cause that predictive variability where they tend to be, where they always are, versus the general population. We've got a number of people pointing out that there could well be more stocks vulnerable to the whales at certain times of the year because they may forage out into water flows where they might intercept other stock models. So I think we need to be a little bit more rigorous around time periods and where whales are. There's a lot more variability than seems to come from a lot of the reporting.
Just to follow up, I'll be presenting a combination of the energetics and the rate consumption data. And some of it was presented by Brad Hansen already, and I'm just going to present some highlights and a recent effort by Williams et al. In class one. And it really does. I have summer poor, but I have very specific about the months because all about what the same, what the killer whales are eating, and it doesn't necessarily fall into the solstice patterns, and even yearly it can vary. So I think we just have to be very sure about defining what we're talking about specifically for those different analyses, and it can vary. So it's a little complicated.
Okay.
Yes,
other questions?